the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And with me, recording on a Tuesday night for our review show, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, Revenge of the Birds, of course, is SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And we are on episode 460 as we continue through our kind of our new form, you know, multiple shows a week. This will be our past weekend, our week one review. We'll come back on. We'll record Thursday night. And I'll have that show for you on Friday morning about our picks and predictions, looking ahead and preview for the Giants game in week two. And I have an opponent. So I got Dan Benton from Giants Wire that will talk about the upcoming matchup, get our, you know, behind enemy lines type show that will come on Saturday. So we've got lots of content coming, Seth. I do like to say I was right, but holy crap, that game on Sunday, that pretty much went exactly how I thought it would be. I will say this, that I thought the Cardinals defense was better than expected. And it was less about the Washington offense being terrible and more about the Cardinals defense playing really well. But offensively, it was just, you know, if I described it, Geno Smith in 2021 for those three games, that's what that offense looked like. Blah. But they covered the spread, made me look good on one of my underdog picks.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting to kind of go back in, dive into the numbers, dive into different things, because we had an idea, I think is a good way to put it, of what we expected to see. But then to actually see how everything played out, it was really interesting. And you know, obviously we'll talk about the offense, but what we saw on defense has to be, I don't know if exciting is the right word, but, you know, it's something that you should be excited about and something that we could see, you know, becoming the calling card of this team. And we've seen in the NFL, if you have a great, and they're not great yet, so I don't want anybody to think I'm saying that, but if you have a great defense or a great offense, you can usually compete year in and year out while you figure out the other side of the ball. And to see them, you know, start off on the right foot, look more than competent on defense outside of, you know, some over exuberance early in the game and things of that nature, that, you know, it was cool to see. It was good to see. And I think it's just, you have to look at it as more good things to come, right?
Yeah. That's what I want to talk about this show. There's basically three things we want to go over in this edition of the show. We want to talk about what we learned about the defense. What did we learn? There was lots of the good and the bad on the offense, and then any other takeaways that we got. That would be, yeah. So let's jump right in with the defense, because my goodness, there were mistakes. When was the last time that we saw a Cardinals defense fly to the ball and play as violently? And I know this is something that they preach. They preach violence when it comes to football, and they cross the line a few times. Can you recall another Cardinals defense that was ever this, at least in one game, that just vicious?
No, and that's, you know, that's what they've preached, and that's what they've wanted. And to see it executed in the first game is, you know, impressive. And you know, it's what we were hoping this team would be about. You just never know, though, right? Like, you don't know if they're going to they're going to buy in or play that way. And I know people are going to not like this, and quite frankly, I don't care. But sometimes that first hit that Kaiser White delivered, that sets the tone for everybody else, right? Like, I'm not saying it was a smart thing or a legal thing or that it shouldn't have been called a penalty or anything like that, or even that he shouldn't have been thrown out. There's a strong consideration that he probably, I mean, I literally turned to my wife and my boys and I was like, oh, he's getting kicked out. Like, but it's, I think it kind of set the tone for what the expectation and how they're going to play. Yeah, they're going to make mistakes, but they're going to do it fast and they're going to do it viciously and they're going to do it in a way that they can make up for it with forcing turnovers and creating opportunities. And those things are something that we just haven't seen in a long time. And that, you know, that made it fun to watch.
For me, I think the one thing that surprised me the most about this, as we kind of previewed all offseason, the position groups and the strengths of each group, we had big questions about the defensive line, and it was the least impressive room on this team. Honestly, to me, it was the least impressive room on this team. But let's look at the numbers, and I'm going to include Cameron Thomas because anytime I saw him on the field, he seemed to be playing inside. The defensive line, not the edge guys, but the defensive interior guys, and I'm including Thomas because that's what I saw him doing the most, is rushing from the inside, kind of being kind of like a Zach Allen. 17 tackles, 3 sacks, 3 tackles for loss, pass breakup, fumble recovery, and touchdown scored. When have we had a defensive line produce like that in a game before?
You know, they haven't, and that's what's impressive, is because, like you said, it's not about the names, it's about the effort, and that's what, you know, I feel like that was what Jonathan Gannon kind of wanted to preach in that little speech that everybody made fun of him for, and yes. And so for that to be how they played in the first game, I think was impressive. I think it's exciting. I think it's, you know, block building, so to speak. And all of those things. So, you know, it's just one of the situations where it's early, you know, the two touchdown drives were of what, maybe a total of 50 like actual yards gained, where 67 were penalties on the first drive, and then you know, the last drive was the turnover by Josh Dobbs, and they had a short field. So like the two touchdown drives even were, again, the penalties were their fault, you know, but it wasn't like the Commanders were just marching up and down the field on them. And I think that's, you know, that was important. And we saw guys do different things. We saw guys have success in different areas. And, you know, I think for the most part, you have to look at this as a loss that showed that the defense is probably going to be the calling card, especially until Kyler Murray gets back. And it's going to do exactly what we said, keep them in games.
And it shows that after one game, that what we saw in the preseason was confirmed from the starters, at least, because after that, it was kind of messy in the preseason. But the fact that the starters being out there, they were physical. It was, you know, I mean, they're not like a historically good defense, so it's not like they're going to get 3 and outs every single time. But the fact that they were able to limit Washington to, what was it, a total of 248 yards. They held them on 33% on third down. They averaged 3.3 yards per rush. They forced 3 turnovers. these are all great metrics. These are great metrics that they had. And red zone. You know what those metrics that defensive coordinators always preach is third down and red zone. And they held them to 33% on third down. And they were 2 for 5 scoring touchdowns in the red zone. So there's not much to complain about other than the individual mistakes that they made early on. But there was just, and now, Zaven Collins and Dennis Gardeck, and the fact that they're getting production for Victor Dimakaji, I am amazed at the production that they're getting. Because, you know, Vance Joseph is a highly respected defensive coordinator, but it seems like Nick Rawlis, Jonathan Gannon are just elevating the play. Because, like, Victor Dimakaji he's a special teams guy. And he started the game. He was productive. Gardeck, who we thought, like, 2020 was a fluke. Oh, my gosh. His play was fantastic. Zaven, you know, he didn't get to the – but he was consistently pressuring the quarterback. And that interception that he made, that was fantastic. And I wonder if – because I'm guessing they got this from the production meeting. There were multiple times where the TV broadcasters referred to Zaven Collins as a budding superstar, a burgeoning superstar, basically on the cusp of being a great player. And he had a pretty good season last year, but I don't think there was at any point last year where anyone thought that he was going to be a star, just that he was going to be a capable, competent player. But for the broadcaster to say that, that's a message that's being given to them in the production meetings with coaches. And it seems that this coaching staff really, really believes in what Zaven Collins can do.
Yeah, and, you know, he didn't do much in this game as a pass rusher, but I don't think we were expecting that in his first true game as a pass rusher, right? Like, we weren't expecting him to come out and be Micah Parsons, right? But I think the other things he did, setting the edge, being in good position in coverage, allowing Jonathan Gannon to do things. You know, I was joking around with my buddies on the other day. One of the crazy things that we saw this week was Wink Martindale, the defensive genius that was going to unlock Isaiah Simmons for the New York Giants. One of the really interesting things was that you know, they had him drop into coverage 25% of his pass rushing available snaps.
This defense, it's a traditional 3-4.
It really, yeah, it is. And so that's the thing. So, like, when you have a guy like Zaven, who's not a traditional edge rusher as of yet, right? You don't mind him dropping off, because then you can bring four, or you can blitz from the inside like they did multiple times, and you can drop into zones without, you know, one of the things we always complain about, why is Vance Joseph having Chandler Jones drop into coverage, right? What is going on with that? Well, in this defense, that's okay, because Zaven's not necessarily your elite edge rusher at this point. He's just one of your outside linebackers. And so that makes this defense a little more multiple. Whereas, you know, a guy that you draft 5th overall to be an edge rusher that's, you know, dropping into coverage, you're like, hey, our defense is getting smoked right now. Can you not drop our best edge rusher into coverage? And so I think what it does is, and it's not an excuse for Zaven not, you know, playing well in his first, or not rushing the passer well the first time he had a chance, but it is a reality that, hey, you know what? He still is able to contribute heavily to this defense.
And while I didn't think, well, obviously he didn't pass rush to production, I thought he was productive in terms of what he did. There was movement of the pocket. There was pressure. But I mean, I don't know what the actual metrics showed. Like, he didn't hit the quarterback, he didn't sack the quarterback, but he did make Sam Howell move multiple times. with his pressure.
And I thought he did an excellent, excellent job setting the edge as an edge defender, which is something that outside of Chandler, we didn't see a whole lot of the last couple of years. Like, it was actually one of the weak spots of this defense. So, you know, it was a good thing. I wanted to ask you this, and I know you wrote the article today. Was the defensive rotation a surprise to you? Like, how it's basically the it's basically the starting secondary and Kaiser White, and then everybody else is on a rotation.
You know,
I mean, I know Kayvon Wallace played a ton of snaps as like the nickel guy.
He was Isaiah Simmons. Playing with the edge. I thought that they were going to use Antonio Hamilton basically as the slot guy, but apparently they like JT playing the slot. And they bring in Wallace to be Isaiah Simmons. And the fact that Isaiah Simmons didn't fit in this defense, that says a lot about him. If
you know, yeah, and I don't know if we talked about the Odegaard article after the fact. Did we talk about that?
Not really. We didn't have a chance to talk, but the fact that, you know, and Monty Austinfort on the final preseason broadcast suggested it. You know, it was there was a cultural fit problem, and the fact that they moved into a position that he supposedly felt better about, and he can't, like, Kayvon Wallace is a fine player, but Isaiah Simmons playing that position should be special. Why he wouldn't fit in that violent, you know, play.
Well, and there's two plays in this game that Kayvon Wallace made that if he has not even Isaiah's size, but just Isaiah's athletic ability, they're pick sixes. And so, like, that's, you know, what's lost in this situation. You know, but, and it's unfortunate that Isaiah didn't fit, but, you know, the way the rotation worked with the secondary, you know, both safeties, both corners, and Kaiser, basically, they're going to be on the field 100% of the time. I know Jalen Thompson didn't play one snap, but they're basically...
He left because he had to come out of the game for a play.
Was it his helmet came off, right?
It was he was shaken up on one play, and so there was an injury time. He had to come off the field.
Right. So, like, it's not like they were going to... So, basically, it looks like what they're doing is they're going to play, like you said, mostly a traditional 3-4. They're going to roll... So, they're rolling Kayvon Wallace in, and are they taking out Woods?
For much of what it was, and I don't know if it was exclusively, they maintained their five-man front and left Kaiser in and then had five defensive backs. They basically had a 5-1-5.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, and so it's interesting to see how they rotate it because, you know, Zaven Collins and Jonathan Ledbetter lead the way with just over 40 snaps. So, what about 60% of the snaps, which is the Ledbetter thing. That's what we said the lead D tackles do, right? And Collier was at 37, so he's, you know, just above 50%. But from there, it's just basically a rotation, right? Like, it's like, here you go, guys. Like, Watkins plays a little less than half. Strong plays a little less than half. Gardeck, Thomas, Dimick. And it's almost like they're playing them in waves. And they're like, hey, you've got, you know, four plays this series. Or you've got this series. So, go balls to the wall. And, like, know that, like, you're going to get a break the next series. So, like, we don't need you to come back in. Because, like, didn't it seem... In the game, like, Dennis Gardeck played way more than just 28 snaps
it really did.
Yeah. And so, and again, I want to point out, when you look at how they're being utilized, it's really crazy that basically a third of their passing defensive snaps, they drop these guys into coverage. I mean, and it's, And that it, what it creates is an unknown for the defense. They can't say, oh, Zaven and Dennis are in. So Zaven's going to drop and Dennis is going to rush. You can't say that because it's, I mean, Zaven pass rushed 22 times, dropped 8 times. Gardeck pass rushed 15 times and dropped 6 times in a coverage. You know, Dimakaji rushed the passer 10 times and dropped into coverage 3 times. Jesse Luketa rushed 6, dropped in once. BJ Ojulari had 12 snaps, 7 pass rush, 2 he dropped into coverage. Like, it's legitimately almost a third of their passing down snaps they drop into coverage. So what it does is it just makes them, it just creates this unknown that you could, they can bring anybody at any point at any time. I mean, Kaiser White blitz, Buda Baker blitz, Jalen Thompson blitz, Kayvon Wallace blitz, Josh Woods blitzed. Chris Barnes blitzed. I mean, that's, they literally will bring anybody from anywhere at any time, but they'll also drop off into coverage. And what that does is it confuses quarterbacks. It confuses what they're looking at and what they're seeing, but it also creates pass rush when, let's be honest, there's not a great pass rush. Like, there's not one guy that you're like, oh, this guy's, I mean, there's not a Chandler Jones. There's not that guy on the roster. And so for them to be able to get 6 sacks in the first game, I mean, and I know a lot of people say like, oh, sacks don't matter, you know, like that stuff doesn't matter. But it's crazy to me that they had 6 sacks and the Philadelphia Eagles had 5 or 3. Like, that's absurd. Because there's a 0% chance that you're taking the Cardinals front over the Eagles front. And that's just the way sometimes it works out. And, you know, these guys, they played really well. They did a great job of making plays. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they continue to grow this year, because, you know, there's obviously warts. I mean, there's obviously things that need to be worked on, but, you know, for the most part, I thought it was a nice introduction.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Syria podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about the other side of the ball, which there wasn't nearly as many good things. The offense. That's coming up next on Rise Up Syria. Back on the Rise Up Syria podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We have lots of good things to say about the defense. The offense is a different story. What was good? What was bad? Let's start with the good, because honestly, there wasn't much to it. But didn't it, at least their initial drive, the different looks and the different types of plays they called, that gave a little bit, that felt fun, didn't it, for a little bit?
Yeah, and, you know, it was fun to see different types of things. And like you said, like, it got to the point where they couldn't run the stuff. We'll call it the Dobbs effect, came in. And that's not a shot at Dobbs. It's just a reality. I mean, a guy that's been here less than 2 weeks, he's not going to play well. He's just not going to play well. And so, and we talked about it too, man. They're going up against the best defensive front in the NFL. Like, they're just so good, and it showed. I mean, the run blocking was not good. The pass blocking was okay. A guy we thought looked really good in the preseason and yelled a Froholt looked awful. You know, DJ Humphreys looked like it was his first game back in a while. He did not play well. You know, but outside of that, you look at it, I think you're excited about, we talked about it a little bit. James Conner looked a little more explosive. You know, he looked like a guy that can be productive in this offense. I liked what I saw out of Trey McBride. Zach Ertz isn't healthy. A healthy Zach Ertz, even though that was a poorly thrown ball, probably catches that high pass for a touchdown, right? Like, all of those things played a role, and yet they still got the ball back with plenty of time to win the game. Yeah. They still had multiple chances. Like, all of the negatives still didn't matter because they still had a chance at the end.
And that, honestly, that was because of the defense, but offensively, there was just you liked what you saw schematically. You hated what you saw executionally. Because what you saw was some fun things in the running game, multiple stuff on the running side of things. You saw moving the pocket, which if we see that from Kyler, I think that will be really good. We saw Rondell Moore used a little bit down the field. It was as much as we like that the defense looked like it looked like your traditional 3-4 defense schematically. This offense looked less gimmicky, and I hate to call Cliff's offense gimmicky because it was based on there were different philosophical type beliefs about things, but the idea of them not being predictable, I thought that they were fairly predictable, but that might have been for a number of reasons, who they were playing, and lots of things like that. But what did we see a ton of? We saw a ton of tight end and running back usage. In fact, like I charted out the numbers of their 58 plays, 36 of them went in the direction of a tight end or running back. That's a lot. But that also might have simply been part of the game plan against Washington, where we discussed how their strength is up front and less so in the middle and the back end.
Right, and, you know, it's one of those situations where, and it was funny, we were actually talking at my youth football practice tonight about this. The difference in how hard it is to find five offensive linemen that can play in unison and look good than it is to find four or five, you know, defensive front guys that you're just like, hey, go kill people. Like, it's just, it's so different. And again, when you talk about going up against the best just across the board defensive front in the NFL with a bunch of killers and you're a new offense, learning, playing with a quarterback that's been there less than 2 weeks. And let's be honest, a bunch of guys that didn't get a lot of reps together. I mean, none of these guys played all of these. None of this grouping all played together in the preseason. It never happened because Josh Dobbs wasn't there and Zach Ertz wasn't there in the preseason. You know, DJ Humphries got what, like 20 snaps in the preseason. Like these guys just, I mean, it's going to be slow. It's going to be ugly, but you have to fight through the minutiae of what we saw, especially the negatives, and say like, hey, I love the usage of the 2 and 3 tight end sets. I love the usage of Marquise Brown. I love the usage of Michael Wilson and Rondell Moore. Zach Ertz and Trey McBride are going to be used a ton in this offense. And then James Conner is really going to thrive once they're able to throw the ball consistently a little bit more. If they're able to throw the ball a little bit better this last game, they probably win by a touchdown. If Kyler Murray's playing, they probably win by 2 touchdowns, if not more. Like,
that's the thing. If it weren't for Josh Dobbs coughing up the football, they should win that game. And that's with the offense playing bad. And that's the part that for me was frustrating is that.
Oh, totally frustrating because you look at it and you say, what could have been based on, you know, a bevy of things. What could have been if they kept Colt McCoy, or what could have been if they didn't give Colt McCoy the off season to see if his arm strength could build back up, and they just went and signed Jacoby Brissett or even Josh Dobbs in March, right? Like any of these guys. Yeah, and instead, yeah. And that's, you know, that's all part.
I was just going to, and I keep hitting, like I said it when they cut McCoy and traded for Dobbs. I'm like, I you can make the argument, but I have a hard time believing that even a washed up McCoy was a worse option than what we saw in week one. Maybe it improved. Maybe there is some upside, but we've seen Josh Dobbs since 2017. I think he is what he is. This isn't Geno Smith, okay? Geno Smith, who was a widely, like, you love Geno Smith coming out of college, who was drafted high. Not, he wasn't drafted, you know, he wasn't a first-round pick, but many thought he would be, and got extensive starting experience on a bad team, and then waited. This is completely different. Josh Dobbs he's been a QB3 most of his career. And now he's starting, and we're expecting him to be the best option that we have till Kyler gets back. I have a really hard time believing that. And I'm not hopeful about it.
Yeah, and I mean, and if people are not, I understand why. I mean, Dobbs' career, the way he's played, the way he just missed things on Sunday, it was bad. I mean, there's no two ways around it. It was just bad. And so he's got to be better if this team's going to win. And if they're not, then, you know, a lot of that falls on him. And it's just, you know, it just makes it tough because you want to be excited about things. But at the same time, it's hard to be excited when you've got Josh Dobbs as your quarterback. So, you know, I'm taking the wait and see approach. I'm not overly panicked at this point because I realized that it was going to be a hard, you know, long, hard season anyways. Like, this was going to be one of those seasons that you kind of had to take with a grain of salt. You look at their upcoming schedule, you know, we'll talk about the Giants on Thursday, but you look at their upcoming schedule, they got Dallas, who looked great, San Francisco, who looked great, Cincinnati, who looked like bums, but, you know, should be great, and then Los Angeles, who actually looked great in those 6 weeks. And so when do you bring back Kyler, and do they look better? Like, those are all questions we'll have to ask. But, like, if they start to progress offensively, especially going into this next game or coming out of this next game, I think that just makes you more excited for what could be.
Yeah, especially against a team that is not nearly as strong up front.
I mean, Dexter Lawrence is a monster, but
he is, but
outside of that, they're a very vulnerable team on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, you hope that this team can improve, especially in their home opener, and give this team a chance to win.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Josh Dobbs. Coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's discuss any other takeaways that we've got from the game. That's coming up next on Rise Up Series. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. You know, I know there are people who are rooting for the tank job, that losing to the Commanders probably was better in the long term. That said, when they had a lead, and they were up 16-10, and then they had the ball, I'm like, they just need a field goal. If they can get up by more than one score, they've got this. Well, then they turned the ball over. And so that's kind of how that went. You know, what did you think of the penalty drive that they had? the two personal fouls, the Marco Wilson pass interference call. I know ultimately those were critical mistakes, but that and the number of penalties, ended up with 9 penalties for 122 yards, I think what it was. Did you feel that this team was as undisciplined as we've seen before?
No, I mean, I thought they started off just overly aggressive, trying to make a statement. And, you know, like I said, I'm not going to say it was good, but like it felt like it set the tone for this defense to play the way it did. The Wilson, you know, PI, that's just a boneheaded play. He got beat initially and then didn't want to give up a big play. And if he would have just happened to peek, it would have been a situation that he would have seen that the ball was just thrown poorly and he wouldn't have got to it anyways, right? So,
yeah. I will say, though, one thing, you know, we hated about Patrick Peterson, but it's something that he was really smart about. If he knew early that he was beat, he'd grab the guy and he'd get called for holding. But you've got to do that before the ball is thrown. But, like, he knew, like, that's something that he knew and he did multiple times. If he knew he got beat, he made sure to get the 5-yard penalty and start again rather than mauling, you know, running over the guy in the route.
And then I thought there was a couple really ticky-tack stuff, especially the roughing the passer. I didn't understand what that was, especially when you go later on and Jonathan Allen literally clubs Josh Dobbs in the face for a sack and they don't call that. So it's like, you know, some people say all the time, you know, the NFL's rigged or joke about it. And there are instances where you see plays where you're like, huh? Like, I mean, the holding call on in the Patriots-Eagles game, I don't know if you saw it or didn't see it.
I didn't see that one.
It was literally like a clean block and they called a hold. And it was on Hunter Henry, the tight end, and like the guy just got pancaked and fell down and Hunter Henry just kept running and they called a hold and you're like, what's going on here? Like, what are we doing? You know, so it's just interesting how it goes, but you know, at the end of the day, undisciplined, if you want to call it, or overly aggressive, which is what I would call it, especially the personal foul penalties.
Yeah. That's what I felt. It was less about mental mistakes, like pre-snap type things, as it was about over-aggression, bad decision-making, as opposed to the freaking, you know, false starts, those or delay of game. Those are always just maddening. And these were football penalties as opposed to bonehead penalties.
Right. Well, it's funny because I actually, you know, it's one of the conversations that you have as a coach all the time. It's like, hey, I'll take physical mistakes all the time. Like, I'll take a physical mistake, but we can't have mental mistakes. And you know, there were several mental errors still. But at the end of the day, you have to be like, oh, there were just a lot of physical errors that they just need to continue to clean up and get better about. Like I said, I almost feel like, again, I'm not saying I'm okay with it, but I almost feel like the Kaiser White penalty was just to kind of set the tone for the season.
It might have been that. I mean, it was too much. But White, like the limited play time that we saw him in the preseason was, he's going to set the tone, that's going to be fun. Were you, with the game, were you more encouraged, or did your opinion about this team stay the same, or were you more discouraged?
I was definitely more encouraged. I was hopeful that we would see this kind of defense. I didn't. It's one of those things that you can always be hopeful, but you know, it's interesting to look at things and say, oh, well, this is actually how it happened, or it's actually happening, as opposed to like, oh, you know, we're going to be a physical and aggressive defense. And so just to see it, you're like, oh, this is, this is different. That's encouraging, because not only did they say they were going to do it, they did it, and they did it to a point where they, again, they had themselves in a position to win the game. You know, a better quarterback, they win that game. There's just no two ways around it.
Right. Yeah, I was definitely encouraged, and it confirmed, at least initially, the little bit that we saw from the starting defense in the preseason. And I always felt like, when going back to our game-by-game predictions and like the number of games we thought, I always felt that this year, even if it wasn't good early, that this defense would come together and be very competitive simply because of the type of players and the type of scheme that they're running.
Let's not get it twisted either. We're not going to say that they're going to be a top four defense in the league.
No, the projection from ESPN's Mike Clay is that they're going to give it 457 points this year.
Right. And so if they can be a top 25, or heaven forbid, top 20 scoring defense this year, after what they did, and some of it was, you know, on their own, But after moves they've made and the way that they've changed things around, you have to be excited.
Yeah, that's the and more than anything, I was just like, if Kyler's out there, and then as long as they stay healthy, this confirms in my mind my belief about this team. If Kyler's back, that this is not gonna be a terrible team. And it was disappointing to see, you know, power rankings and all that. But my network, Touchdown Wire's power rankings, they didn't move from number 32. I'm like, they showed that they were better. Now, granted, Washington's not good. Like, there were questions about Washington. They're a last-place team in the NFC East. But the way the Cardinals play was super encouraging. Do I think that they'll win more games? Like, I had them pegged winning one before Kyler gets back, and I still think it's the case. I still think that if there's a game that they can win, it's this one, because, you know, Cowboys, 49ers, Bengals, and so, like, if there is an early win to be had, it's this one. And I don't think now, and we'll talk in the next show, I don't even think it would be stealing a win, in my opinion.
Right. And that's the thing, is you have to look at it, is that we knew that there was only, you know, two or three winnable games in the first half of the season, just on paper. Obviously things change, and this was one of them. And so it sucks that they, I don't want to say gave up, because it's not like they purposefully lost this game, but like, it sucks that they gave up one of those chances by going with Dobbs as the quarterback. And so hopefully, you know, they're able to continue to play at a higher level and continue to play. You know, this wasn't a one-off, like you said, of, oh, well, the Commanders are just a really bad team.
And then,
you know, like,
that's what I want to see moving forward, because there were questions about Mount Washington's offense. So if the Cardinals go out and play good defensively moving forward, that just adds two things. Although, we saw from the Giants, I don't know if we will know more about the Cardinals if they do play well, simply because of how bad the Giants looked on offense last week.
Right, and you know, Daniel Jones, we joked about it. My buddies and I joked about it. They basically, anybody that paid their quarterback this offseason got a bad return early. And it's one game, and it, you know, in the end it doesn't matter. But it was just, it's funny to see that, because, you know, Joe Burrow became the highest paid player in NFL history, and he looked worse than Josh Dobbs, and Daniel Jones got $40 million a year and he looked worse than Josh Dobbs. And so it's just funny to see that it wasn't just Arizona. The difference being that those teams you look at and you go, oh, well, they'll just get it right. Whereas like the Cardinals don't get the benefit of that. Right. They look at it and they go, oh, they lost one of their few opportunities for a win.
Yeah. But we'll be back on Tuesday. This will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Seared podcast, Mr. of Cardinals Talk on the Web. We will record, Seth and I will record Thursday night, previewing the Giants game. And I will have one with a Giants writer, later on the week, probably for Saturday. I'll publish that. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again in a couple days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!